Professor Nader?
Madam Mayor, members of Council, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. There are a number of questions put to Jane, which I wouldn't mind responding to at some
point. I'm sure they'll be put to you, Professor Nader.
Okay. My task today, given the time we have, is to focus on the financial issues which surround both the situation at Trent, the deficit, which has been much publicized, and the specific finances of the Superbuild proposal, which involves closing of the downtown colleges. So I'd like to address those two areas, the deficit as such and how it relates to the issues, and secondly, looking specifically at the business case for Superbuild and where its limitations are. First then, to the deficit and how it affects us. I think we all here would agree that Trent's survival is much more important than the survival of downtown colleges. I think that's how we all see it. And it's simply the fact that we see Trent's survival in terms of recovery of enrollment and not in terms of closing downtown colleges. And that I'd like to explain to you why in fact the numbers do not support such an assertion, nor the letter from Bonnie Patterson with reference to revenue and revenues and costs. First, the deficit. I think the number which is broadcast around is $9 million. That includes a number of things which are not really truly considered costs. And if you look at one looks at the financial statements, there is an exclusion of things like paid up untaken leaves, perhaps vacation pay, for example, the 30th of April. Since most staff take their vacation in the summer, there's an accumulation of costs. So if Trent closes on the 30th of April, there'd be $750,000 to pay in lieu of vacation. But of course, people take their vacation later, which is the normal procedure, and it costs nothing. So if you subtract a number of things like that, things that will come in the future and simply be paid for in the normal process of financing payroll, it drops to about half of the 9 million. I think 4.5 million is as high a number, 4 to 5 million, as one would estimate the deficit at. So I think that there's a certain amount of confusion with respect to the size. The second is the Superbuild relationship to the deficit. I don't think I've ever seen any argument anywhere which says that building buildings reduces operating deficits or has any impact on operating deficits. There is no expectation that Superbuild will do that. Buildings have nothing to do with operating deficit. In fact, the government is very careful about this and will not allow you to put into your application anything to do with even the future maintenance of the buildings they approve. So you simply cannot imagine a situation in which there'll be surplus money from building in order to ease the burden of the deficit. So there's really no relationship, and the fact that we have to make a Superbuild application does not warrant any financial moves on the operating budget or the colleges. The third is the colleges and the deficit. Colleges historically have operated as ancillary operations, and they have been self-financing. They have not been a burden on the deficit. The $9 million deficit or the $4.5 million deficit does not include a component, maybe a few $1,000s because of last year's problems with a huge drop in enrollment, but no real element of the deficit can be attributed to colleges. Our enrollment declines have caused difficulties with the college as it has caused with the university. 3/4 of the university's deficit is probably caused by enrollment declines. And the colleges last year and the year before suffered, as the university itself suffered with enrollments. But this year, we have now filled all our beds because the university's enrollment has risen, and there's a good expectation that we'll return once again as enrollment recovers to self-financing for the colleges. So the colleges and the budget deficit have nothing in common. There's no relationship. I'd like to read just a brief a paragraph from a letter that recently sent to the Examiner by John Hillman, who's the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. He says, enrollments are now recovering and current annual deficits will therefore decline. There is simply no evidence that the financial viability of the university can only be secured with the closure of the town colleges. Indeed, the signs from alumni and other friends of Trent suggest that the controversy generated by this proposal is jeopardizing the ability of the university to raise the funds required for its current capital campaign. What is beyond dispute is that centralization on Trent's suburban campus cannot be achieved without losing much of the valuable contribution provided by the town colleges to the university and to the city. I think there's a clear understanding that the two are not connected. The issue of the downtown colleges is not connected to the deficit. That's the main point I wish to make. The second is to look at the Superbuild itself and why it needs the downtown colleges to be closed, or does it? There are three points I want to make with respect to the financial cost. One is that the closing of the downtown colleges, because of the necessary transfer of academic space, not necessarily residential space, but academic space, there are about 100 offices in the two colleges that need to be moved to the main campus. That will actually cost the university $5 to $6 million. It will cost about $8 million to build it. We may get $2 to $3 million from the sale when we've paid off the mortgages and so on. But the government is not funding replacement. It explicitly has a line which says subtract deleted space. And so the university is itself responsible for 100% of the replacement of any space we wish to keep from the downtown colleges. And based on their numbers, in the task force report, it would cost $8 million to build equivalent academic space. And we may get $2 to $3 million net from the sale of the downtown colleges. And we will lose 330 beds. Get nothing for that. We lose 330 beds, and we have a $5 to $6 million bill. There's no argument by the university which indicates how we will recover $5 to $6 billion from whatever revenues that will be saved from, or costs will be saved from closing the downtown colleges. So it doesn't make sense on that point. The second point is the loss of the 330 beds. Trent, at the moment, had a waiting list, or this year had a waiting list in the fall, and we're not even yet at the enrollment level we were 3 to 4 years ago. If we wish to grow through the double cohort in 3-4 years' time, and also the long-term growth, we'll need every bed we have now just to if we recover our past enrollment, or right now. To grow, we will need more beds. So the 330 beds, reduction in 330 beds, with the hope that some private developer will come along to build these at no cost to the university on university land in a way that is harmonious with Trent's collegiate system, is all we have. We don't know any facts. There are no it's an uncharted territory. But there's a hope, and that's all there is. We don't know really what it means. If we look at how we promote Trent, one question, this is a question and answer for high school students. Tell me about my guaranteed place and residence. The university says all new students admitted to Trent are guaranteed a residence room. That couldn't happen if we lost 330 beds unless we were guaranteed by somebody to build them somewhere. It isn't part of Superbuild, because Superbuild is only for teaching space. So it is not a part of Superbuild's proposal. It has to be built by somebody out there who wants to build residences and make money out of it. That is a hope, and that's all it is. So we have a problem with losing 330 beds in addition to the 5 to 6 million. Finally, the only argument made by the university in the task force report is on deferred maintenance. We all know when you have an older building, you expect to pay more in maintenance. It's like when you buy a used car, but you pay less in total. The cost of the building, the maintenance, on balance, comes out as something better than buying a new building, which is the case with our current proposals to build a $225 a square foot on the campus. However, and interestingly enough, in the handout we've given you, there's a table at the back of a letter to the ministry. You'll see it actually turns out, remarkably enough, to be the case that the best bets in terms of deferred maintenance are downtown. Peter Robinson and Trail are the two most efficient colleges on a per square foot basis, using the university's square footage, the university's deferred maintenance estimates. We have the best bets downtown, the lowest per square foot cost, the lowest per bed cost. And yet, the university proposes to close the downtown colleges. Any business person would say you should keep the downtown colleges because they are our cheapest. The per bed cost is $7,000 downtown, $14,000 on the campus, $20 per square foot for the main residence, $40 per square foot on the campus. So we're talking about very big differences and favoring the downtown.
Your time is almost up, Professor Nader.
Sorry.
15 seconds.
Well, if I had time, I would tell you how I was worried about the loss of the educational value of being downtown for the university students. I'm worried about the loss of accessibility. My years is running the continuing education program. I'm worried about the loss to the community of a loss of accessibility. And I'm also worried about the economic benefits that are lost. And lastly, the reason we're here is in part because this process has been done with utmost secrecy. We have not been part of a consultative process in our tradition. And as one example of that, the university administration has refused to provide the university community with a superbuild application. We have not seen it. We saw a draft of it that went to the Board of Governors. We are not allowed to see what the university has submitted on our behalf. It has reached that level of secrecy, and that's why we're here, because we think there is a case to be made for the downtown colleges that's being ignored, and this secretive process is not helping us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nader. Are there any questions for Professor Nader or any member of council? Councillor Lee.
Thank you, Worship. Thank you for your presentation, Professor Nader. You heard the question I posed to Ms. Davidson, and you can respond.
Thank you. You refer to cost revenue analysis. And in fact, the university has not provided any information to the community on costs and revenues with respect to the downtown or any colleges. There have been assertions to the effect that consolidation will save money, but there has been no information at all. Ironically, the very thing one would expect to have should be cost revenue analysis is none.
Thank you, Professor Nader. Yes. Councillor Edwards?
Yes, Professor Nader. Is there any data available anywhere on whether the economic impact on the city would change depending on where the students were located? If they're up at the Nassau campus, would you anticipate them spending less in the city of Peterborough? Is there anything that can give us some guidance that way?
I think if you would realize that we were given exactly 2 weeks from the publication of the task force report and the Senate meeting, which turned down the reduction in the colleges, we just haven't had the time to do that analysis. But the impression we have is that the downtown college residents do, in fact, very quickly develop links with the community and links with the downtown merchants and so on. As one indication of that is the retention rate in terms of residents. A much higher proportion of students who are in residence on the campus stay in residence because, in a sense, they become institutionalized. They come from far, they move to the campus, they live in the campus, and they stay on the campus and then go home. Whereas those who live downtown, in the downtown residences, tend to become more comfortable in the community and therefore move on. And so we have a much smaller proportion because, in the case of Peter Robbins College, they can walk across the road and get a residence at maybe a better price in their view, and still keep their links with the college so that there is a greater, if you like, spin-off for the community in the downtown colleges, whereas if it were only the campus, I think there'd be much more of an institutional-based spending pattern.
Interesting. Thank you.
Any further questions for Dr. Nader? Yes.
Do you know if there was a deadline for the superbuild application, or why do you sense that it was kind of rushed, or you feel it was rushed?
We were told sometimes, I think it was in the budget statement of spring, so we knew it was coming. And the government, we were told by the administration, expected to produce its invitation for proposals for a deadline sometime in September. Thus a rush. I think a task force was set up in July and was meeting. In fact, the government did not submit its invitation until the middle of October. But there was maybe about 2.5 months when we were aware that there was a task force in operation and requested participation from the downtown colleges, and we were not invited to do so. There were, in fact, no members on the task force from the downtown colleges. So clearly there was no possibility for us to participate and solve whatever problems might have been perceived. We simply do not know what the problems are because we weren't allowed to be part of that process.
Thank you. Councillor McIntyre.
Professor, I should state that I am a Trent grad. I guess I'm really struggling with some of the things you're saying because it sounds to me as it's all about process. And I guess I need to know from you why you think I should get into the university process when it's their process. It's not ours. And I'm really struggling with I think you're asking us to do that. And I haven't heard you say anything yet that's really convinced me that I ought to have my nose in somebody else's business, basically.
I think I would say that it is, the process is not entirely our issue. We do believe that it is an unwise decision that the university has made. We do believe that there's a very special relationship in Peterborough. I've been here since 1970, and when I came, I heard the stories about the GE shop floor people who contributed part of their salary and so on. And so we've always felt at Trent, those of us who came in that era, that there was indeed a special relationship with the community. And I do believe this is turning its back on the community. I think we are abandoning a lot of the things we have stood for. My own experience with continuing education, when I ran the continuing education program for 6 years, was that you had to be accessible to people. The campus, no matter how you design it, is an apprehensive place for the average person in Peterborough. And when I go to your campus or any other campus, I'm worried about whether I can find a place to park, where the buildings are, will they tow my car, will I need money, or will I be able to... It's not comfortable territory. Peter Robinson College and Trail are in the community's territory. You know, it's there, it's the community's area. And therefore, your accessibility is much easier in a downtown location. And that's our window into the community. That's a two-way process, that we are two-way location, if you like. So I think there is a stake here that the community has, and all of us have, when a public institution actually departs from what we might say is a good, sensible decision. I think we do have a case, and that's where I think City Council is involved, part of the community.
Thank you. Councillor Hall.
Dr. Nader, are you aware that City Council got our nose in the business around the Armory? It's around Central Public School and Quaker Oats?
I have heard references to some. I have heard also that one should get involved because of some of these.
I was sort of going through the meeting again, Councilor Nader. But just you mentioned whether the figure is $9 million or $4.5 million, there is an operating deficit. Does your group have a plan to help address that operating deficit so you can, you know, go to the president, to the Board of Governors, and say, listen, this is our plan to help make this ship keep afloat?
Again, bearing in mind we've not been invited to be part of the process, I think the deficit I mentioned is largely enrollment-driven and will be solved by enrollment strategies. And really bringing us together and promoting enrollment growth is the right strategy for Trent. The other, at the Board of Governors, I was allowed to speak. I'm not a member of the board. And I actually urged that the board approve a compromise move in which it would simply approve the president's proposals in terms of the dollar amounts and the square footage, the net square footage, but leave out the subtraction part. Instead of saying we're going to build 10,000 square feet and remove 5,000 downtown, just say you're building 5, the net number. And give us the time then to begin the next day debating how to fix whatever the problems are. So we have offered, but it has not been accepted.
Professor Nader, thank you.
May I, Your Worship, just comment on the Senate motion, if I may give
Well, very quickly, we have a lot of speakers. And
30 seconds.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. It is our view that, in fact, the board is acting ultra vires in overruling the Senate motion, the Senate resolution, because the Senate is the highest authority on educational policy. And it's inconceivable to us that educational policy does not encompass the colleges.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.